we entered the tunnel mouth. It was not a perfect square. Erosion and gravity had turned the perfect tunnel into a rough cave for 100 meters into the cliff wall. Beta stopped just where the tunnel floor grew smooth and extinguished his torch. The other Bikura did likewise. It was very dark. The tunnel had turned enough to block out any starlight that might have entered. I had been in caves before. With the torches extinguished, I did not expect my eyes to adapt to the near-total darkness. But they did. Within 30 seconds, I began to sense a roseate glow. Dim at first, then ever richer until the cave was brighter than the canyon had been. Brighter than Pacham under the glow of its triune moons. The light came from 100 sources, 1,000 sources. I was able to make out the nature of these sources just as the Bikura dropped reverently to their knees. The cave walls and ceiling were encrusted with crosses, ranging in size from a few millimeters to almost 1 meter long. Each glowed with a deep pink light of its own. Invisible in the torchlight, these glowing crosses now suffused the tunnel with light. I approached one embedded in the wall nearest me, 30 or so centimeters across. It pulsed with a soft, organic glow. This was not something that had been carved out of stone or attached to the wall. It was definitely organic, definitely alive, resembling soft coral. It was slightly warm to the touch. There came the slightest whisper of sound. No, not sound. A disturbance in the cool air, perhaps. And I turned in time to see something enter the chamber. The Bikura were still kneeling, their heads down, eyes lowered. I remained standing. My gaze never left the thing which moved among the kneeling Bikura. It was vaguely man-shaped, but in no way human. It stood at least 3 meters tall. Even when it was at rest, the silvered surface of the thing seemed to shift and flow like mercury suspended in midair. The reddish glow from the crosses set into the tunnel walls reflected from sharp surfaces and glinted on the curved metal blades protruding from the thing's forehead. 4 wrists, oddly jointed elbows, knees, armored back, and thorax. It flowed between the kneeling Bikura, and when it extended 4 long arms, hands extended but fingers clicking into place like chrome scalpels, I was absurdly reminded of His Holiness on Pacham, offering a benediction to the faithful. I had no doubt that I was looking at the legendary Shrike. At that moment I must have moved or made a sound, for large red eyes turned my way, and I found myself hypnotized by the dance of light within the multifaceted prisms there. Not merely reflected light, but a fierce, blood-bright glow, which seemed to burn within the creature's barbed skull and pulse in the terrible gems set where God meant eyes to be. Then it moved. Or rather, it did not move, but ceased being there and was here. Leaning less than 1 meter from me, its oddly jointed arms encircling me in a fence of body blades and liquid silver steel. Panting hard but unable to take a breath, I saw my own reflection, face white and distorted, dancing across the surface of the thing's metallic shell and burning eyes. I confess that I felt something closer to exultation than fear. Something inexplicable was happening. Forged in Jesuit logic and tempered in the cold bath of science, I nevertheless understood at that second the ancient obsession of the God-fearing for another kind of fear. The thrill of exorcism, the mindless whirl of dervish possession, the puppet dance ritual of tarot, and the almost erotic surrender of seance, speaking in tongues, and Zen-Gnostic trance. I realized at that instant just how surely the affirmation of demons or the summoning of Satan somehow can affirm the reality of their mystic antithesis, the God of Abraham. Thinking none of this but feeling all of it, I awaited the embrace of the shrike with the imperceptible tremble of a virgin bride.